Welcome to I Feel Tried, the podcast. I'm Dez. And in honor of Pride Month, I wanted to reach out to people remotely that are inspiring and interesting that also are LGBTQ people. So I reached out to my friend Michael McDonald, who works in politics, and I just wanted to open the conversation to be able to ask, like, basically a politics for dummies sort of a thing. So, Michael, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dez. Thank you so much. Excited to be here. And those words you mentioned at the beginning about inspiring—that's excellent. I love that, and hope that I can share my message as much as I can. So thanks.
Yes. And I know you're super busy, so I definitely want to thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to entertain us here on this silly little podcast. So
absolutely. Happy to be here.
I appreciate that. Okay. So I didn't know this when I reached out to you, but I always had known that you were somebody who really invested in being well-informed when it comes to politics. You used to live here in Ventura County. I know you moved a few years ago. And what are you doing up in Oakland these days?
Yeah, so I'm originally from New York, as you know. And in 2015, I relocated down to Ventura County and was there for 4 years while I worked for a local state senator there and worked for the Democratic Party as well. And in addition to that, I am an appointed commissioner for a public ethics commission for one of the local jurisdictions here. So kind of focused all on elections and policy, open government, and good governance is my main area of focus now.
So what exactly is an ethics commissioner? What does somebody, like, describe what your position would entail to somebody like me who doesn't really know those words combined together?
Sure. So an ethics body is basically, an ethics commission is the enforcement body for a local jurisdiction. And so, for example, a city has numerous ordinances, which are laws in a city that are good governance ordinances. And so, for example, if someone was to request public documents from the city, there's a specific time frame established in law, how fast you have to reply to the individual who's requesting them. And there's laws, the Brown Act, for example, in California, dictates the laws around open meetings. So creating open and public meetings. So legislative body meetings have to be open to the public. In city council meeting, the agendas have to be published within 72 hours before the meeting. We have other areas that we focus on as well, like lobbyist registration, for example. And one of the primary roles is in campaign finance. And so the Ethics Commission is the enforcement body of all of those good governance ordinances and laws in a city, primarily focused on campaign finance. And so the enforcement body is working to engage the community, increase voter participation, and ensure that the laws in place are being followed by our elected officials, our candidates for elected office, and our public employees.
Jesus. So you really have to know a lot about the law. Like, I would almost, it almost comes off as if you're like also an attorney.
Yeah, exactly. And 90% of the commission are attorneys. And that was one of the, you know, the reasons why I wanted to really be on that commission is most of my work is on the regulatory side. And I work in developing the policies and implementing the policies, but not enforcing.
Is that something that you would ever branch out into, is to getting, what is it, taking the bar exam?
Yeah, well, I'm engaged to an attorney and come from a family where my uncle was a criminal defense attorney, and I've always considered it myself, but, you know, I'm more interested in the policy aspect and laws and policy and issue oriented, but
that's a power couple right there. Oh my God. Jesus. Very cool.
Someday.
How long have you been engaged? I don't think I've met your fiance, have I?
You may have. Arturo is originally from Oxnard.
We've been
engaged now for a year and been together for close to 9 years.
Yes, that is right. I remember. Yes. We used to hang out. We worked together part-time a few years ago, which is how we met. And after that, we would just kind of very casually see each other here and there, like Patty's and out in Ventura. And that must have definitely been when I met him, because that name sounds familiar. But
yeah, for sure.
If you're playing our drinking game this week, what's my favorite word? Anytime you hear, take a sip of whatever you're drinking. So before we really dive in, I want to go ahead and take your temperature on some pop culture sorts of references and just see where your head is at and what side you are on.
Sure.
So if you're willing.
Sounds fun.
Let's play This or That.
All right.
So number one. Are you more of a Starbucks person or Coffee Bean person?
Was always a Starbucks, but now I would lean Coffee Bean.
Right? Oh my God. So many people that don't know about Coffee Bean. Like I had a friend, Christina, from Rhode Island, and she moved out here to LA, and I'm like, let's go to Coffee Bean. She's like, what is that? Why wouldn't we just go to Starbucks? I'm like, your life's going to change.
Yeah.
What's your drink
exactly
there?
I love a cold brew. I love iced coffee, especially here living on the East Coast where the day, you know, warms up pretty much every day. I like to start my morning with a fresh, cold brew.
Okay. Number two. Oh my God. This one might hurt my heart if you choose. Paris or Nicole?
Oh, Paris.
Paris. Everyone likes Paris more.
Did I hurt your heart?
You hurt my soul, my existence. Okay. My role models growing up.
Yes, I have love for both, but when I worked in Manhattan at a steakhouse, her mother, Kathy, was a regular customer of mine. And so I never, you know, met or saw Paris, but...
Was she nice? I really want to hear that she's nice.
Very, okay, very, very nice. Amazing.
Good. Okay. How about number three, TLC or Destiny's Child?
Ooh. Oh, God. That breaks my heart because Left Eye was my first love.
Oh, but, my God. Really?
Destiny's Child is my... Yes. Love Destiny's Child. One of my first concerts. And Michelle. That big was... Michelle fan here, so...
Really? That was one of your first concerts?
Yes. Absolutely.
Where
love
was that?
All of them. But in upstate New York, in Albany. Albany, New York.
Cool. We're on the same page. Number four. Oh, my God. East Coast or West Coast?
Ooh, you know I'm a East Coast native, but now I say the West Coast is the best coast.
Yes,
for
there's
sure
a reason it rhymes.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, cool. Number five, Britney or Christina?
Britney. Diehard Britney.
Ooh,
fan
no
here.
Hesitation. Wow.
No hesitation. Diehard. I'll buy any Britney album ever.
Yes. She was my first concert ever.
Oh, nice. Okay. And she is pop culture.
She is pop culture. She's a princess of pop. Are you kidding? Okay. Number six, winter or summer?
Summer for sure. That's why I left New York.
Yes, me too.
No snow. Summer.
No snow. Okay. Yeah. Number seven, the last one. Ooh. Okay. I'm biased on this one because I'm less informed on history. Michelle Obama or Eleanor Roosevelt?
Ooh. I'm not sure I'd be able to choose. I'd say they're both an old favorite and a new favorite.
Exactly. That's kind of why I put them together, because I think they've both done so many amazing things and they're probably like so impactful.
Yes.
Within their own times.
Although they say, you know, Eleanor Roosevelt was the first female president. So shout out to her for holding it down. Yeah.
Nice. I didn't know that. Hey. Already learning. Cool. Cool. Okay. So I would say you passed the test.
All right. That was fun.
Now I kind of want to lean more in the direction of what you specialize in, which, like we said, is politics.
Sure.
I've always wanted to do an episode like this, and I kind of thought, okay, well, you know, let's do it like a few weeks before the election. That's kind of what I thought initially. And then I started thinking, you know what, with everything that's going on in the world, with all the riots, all the injustices, just the way that everything was handled with the current administration with, COVID-19. I really think it's important to be able to ask questions that maybe people don't always think are going to be acceptable. Like, I'm never afraid to kind of sound silly or uninformed. I mean, yeah, I'm not saying like, yeah, I'm a jackass and I'm proud of it. No, but, right, you know, if it means that me asking the right questions are going to be a way for myself to learn and for maybe other people to learn, then let's do it. So for somebody, maybe an adult already, who doesn't know where to vote or maybe hasn't been inspired to vote, how do you register to vote?
It's extremely important that people do know how to vote. But one thing that always surprises me the most when we talk about voter participation and voter registration is, you know, take it into context of 95 million people watched the Super Bowl this past year. 95 million. 35 million only voted in the last presidential election.
Jesus.
So 60 more million people watched the Super Bowl. And so it's, you know, platforms like these that are so critical to get the conversation out. And so the deadline in California to register is 15 days prior to the November 3rd, 2020 election, which this year is October 19th of 2020. The main website to vote, registertovote.ca.gov. It's super easy. You can register online. If you have a driver's license or a state ID, then the database can pull your signature from those identification cards. So you can register fully online. It takes about 5 minutes. Mm-hmm. The COVID-19 pandemic is going to change how we vote drastically. And just so everyone is aware, the governor signed 2 executive orders that are going to affect how we vote in 2020. And so if you're currently registered and were registered previous to the pandemic and moving forward, all registered voters in the state of California will be issued a vote by mail ballot at the address that you have on file. So it's critical that you go on right now and check your voter status. Mm-hmm. Your voter status is going to identify your address and your voting hub. And so you can go to voterstatus.sos, which is the Secretary of State.ca.gov.
So many people I've heard of moved because of everything, you know, whether they lost their job or maybe their landlord wasn't kind of giving any sort of relief on when their rent is due. So I've seen so many people on Facebook and things saying like, oh, I'm going to go live with, you know, a sibling or with my parents now. And that is actually, exactly. That's an amazing resource. I'm so glad that you plugged that. What was that website again?
Voterstatus.sos.ca.gov.
And what if I don't know what party I want to belong to? What if I haven't exactly chosen a side? What if I don't really know how to choose a side? How does somebody typically come up with that?
Well, of course, you know, your party preference is a very personal thing. And so folks really need to reflect on their core values when thinking about where they align and how to identify themselves. And just like anything that we're learning, it's a spectrum. And it can be very difficult to say, I'm not a Democrat, but I'm not a Republican. Where am I? And, you know, another thing that we have in addition to Democrat, Republican, Independent in California is no party preference. And that's exactly for that. And so it's a quarter of voters, about 5.6 million people in California are registered as no party preference, also referred to as a decline to state.
Does that affect anything on the information that's sent to you or?
It does. Yeah. And so that's a great question. And it's important to keep in mind, you know, the where it affects is the primaries, for example. And so if you're a registered Democrat, for example, you're going to be sent a information for the Democratic primary election and a ballot for that primary election. If you're a registered Republican, you're going to receive information and a ballot for the Republican primary. With no party preference, you, for presidential elections, you have to actually request a ballot. So if you're a no party preference voter in the presidential primary, your ballot will have no presidential candidates on it. So you have to actually request. And this is where it differs. Democrats, for example, allow no party preference to vote in their primaries. Republicans in California do not. It's a closed primary. They will not let no party preference vote in their primary.
But what if you were to, say, register as a Democrat, maybe because you see a lot of your friends are Democrat, or vice versa?
Sure.
Can you still vote the opposite way? So I'm registered as a Democrat, but if, you know, in the future there's somebody who comes up and they're part of the Republican Party, would I be able to, even though I'm registered as a Democrat?
You can, yes. The only difference is the presidential primaries. That's the only key difference, is the presidential primary. And of course, again, you would just request that ballot and then you can vote either way. However, if you were not no party preference and you wanted to vote Republican in the Republican presidential primary on March 3rd, which already passed in California, you would not have been able to do so because the Republican Party is a closed primary.
And so for people who are listening who, you know, again, maybe are not immersed into politics, a primary is basically when you vote on the person who will be running in the end in November for president, right?
Yeah, exactly. And so that's when the candidate is selected. So before, in our Democratic primary, for example, we had over 20 candidates when it started. Yeah. And now we're down to the presumptive nominee, which is Joe Biden. He's not officially the nominee yet because we haven't gone to the party yet. But he's the presumptive nominee since there's no other candidates.
So I heard you mention the Electoral College. Oh, my God. This is one that I just cannot understand. What it is, why it's in place, who is it really benefiting, what is the Electoral College, and how does it work?
So, you know, that's definitely a great question. I think it came shine to light more after the 2016 election and, of course, after, you know, previous elections where we have this discrepancy between popular vote and who actually becomes president. And so it's, you know, it's definitely super confusing for folks. But essentially, to break it down easily, is the Electoral College is written into the Constitution, and it was established because we have such disproportionate populations across the United States. You know, we have a state like California with 40 million, and then we have other states in the Midwest with 300,000 as a population. And so in terms of trying to establish a way to gain equity so that votes across all states would carry the same weight. And so the framers were trying to establish how they could figure out how states would have equity. Unlike in most elections, the person who becomes president, again, is not necessarily the candidate who wins the most votes on election day.
So it's not like American Idol. It's not like
exactly
The Voice.
No.
Okay, it's not
popularity. It's a two-step process. Exactly, it's a two-step process. And so essentially the first step of it is that voters cast ballots on election day in every state. And then the candidate in essentially almost all states, all but two, I believe, the candidate who wins the most votes in that state, so the popular vote in that specific state, wins all the electoral votes for that state and then gets the number of those electorals. There's 538 electoral votes for the whole country. And as we saw in 2016, there's 270 that a candidate needs to obtain to win the presidency. Mm-hmm. So 270 is that threshold to win. California has 55 votes. Why 55? Because we have two senators and we have 53 members of the House of Representatives. And how are the House of Representatives determined? Population base. And that's how there's a discrepancy, where there's a popular vote because, for example, California has 40 million residents, right? So that's 40 million people that could vote either way.
Yeah.
However, you know, we have these 55 electors, and so the numbers, you know, are very different. And so even though 40 million people may have voted one way, or, you know, we have 20.6 registered voters in the state of California. So about half of the population is registered.
20.6 million?
20.6 million registered voters in California, yeah.
And I mean, a lot of that is because people that maybe are interested in voting can't vote. I mean, there's minors that, you know, they have to wait till they're 18, or maybe even people who have committed felonies who are now disabled from voting. That's something that I thought about before when me and my mom have had conversations of like people, like, how come there's not more people? And it's like, well, I'm sure people would like to. It's young people mostly.
Yes, we have youth that are underage that can't vote. We have people who are currently incarcerated for felonies or on parole for felonies. We have non-residents. We have, you know, a plethora of folks who can't vote in the country. But there's also plenty of people that we have in the country that can vote. Mm-hmm. And there's tactics that are used to suppress that vote, like the all-out fight against vote-by-mail ballots that the Republican Party and the president is doing right now to say that it's not safe. Why is it not safe? Because it's proven that liberals vote more by vote-by-mail.
Yeah, I've told my parents that.
You know, it's a fact. It's not rigged. It's not a rigged system. It's just a fact.
Yeah.
And so the fact doesn't fall in their favor. And so there's suppression tactics that are always used. Redlining, zoning. There's so much voter suppression in this country. It's unbelievable.
This week, we want to give a special thanks to our sponsor, H2 Rose.
H2 Rose brings you the benefits of roses and saffron all in a bottle. Rosewater dates back to ancient history and was used by Cleopatra. Ooh, I know her! And Michelangelo, because of its powerful and enriching effects.
H2 Rose is a healthy hydration beverage which improves skin texture, lowers anxiety, improves emotional health, reduces appetite, and is non-GMO, vegan, and gluten-free. To learn more about H2 Rose, please visit drinkh2rose.com.
or visit their Instagram at H2Rose.
Okay, so there are countless words. See, I'm trying to think of a better way to describe
it. It's heavy stuff. Jesus. It's heavy stuff.
So there is a political jargon that people who work in politics totally use on a very daily basis. And there's people like me who I wouldn't even commit to calling myself an informed voter. Because there's so much that I don't know. If I'm interested in something, then I read up and I learn about it. So I want to see if you'd be willing to play another game.
Sure.
We like to play a game called What's the Desfinition?
All right.
Usually it is silly words, but because we have a politician on the show today, this will be all politics based. So I have five terms.
Okay.
And obviously you're going to know the definition to all of these, so we can
all
look
right,
at
we'll
this.
See.
I know, right? We can look at this as a learning experience for the listeners. Or maybe I'll stump you, who knows? And then I'll get the point.
Okay. Right.
So number one, bipartisan.
Yeah. So, I mean, of course, like the word bi, we know with many other meanings it has, it's going to mean both.
Shout out to Pride.
Yeah, exactly. Shout out to Pride Month, June. That's what we want to be achieving is bipartisan, which is essentially reaching consensus between the Democrats and the Republicans. And that's how we move policies forward is by bipartisan support.
When would be a widely known event where we did this last?
I think that there's been many issues where there's been bipartisan support in the past around the environment, for example, or against or for in favor of gay marriage. There was a lot of bipartisan support as well. There was opposition as well. But there's been, a lot of bipartisan support on different issues that you hear. I mean, you hear the word thrown around so much, but a plethora of issues.
Okay, I'll give you that point. Number two. Caucus. That's a fun one.
Yes, that is. And a lot of people get this one confused, but a caucus is essentially another way of a primary. But it's essentially a meeting of supporters of specific political parties or movements to determine who their candidates are moving forward. And so it's the party itself working together and coming together with their representatives in a meeting, and they go back and forth with all the candidates. For example, they start with all the candidates and they break the room up and they all essentially go into a corner. Okay, Joe Biden, you go in that corner. And so everyone goes into their respective corners, and until they can reach a majority vote and consensus on who the candidate is moving forward. And so essentially it's another format of conducting a primary.
So caucus is a verb? I just heard you use it as an action word.
Exactly.
Really?
Yes, it is. Wow. Yeah, it is. It's a meeting. It's a meeting.
Oh, okay. Okay. Number three, delegates.
So delegates are the appointees. And so similar to when we say the Electoral College, they're delegates when they're selected. And so they're representatives of the districts, and they represent the district on a statewide level. And so when the statewide level gets together, the delegates are meeting and discussing the policy platform. And then the policy platform is put forward, and the policy platform is essentially what the candidates then adopt.
Okay, you get that point as well. Okay, number four. Legislation. I have no idea what this word is, and I've always heard it, and I couldn't even attempt to throw it around because I wouldn't know the context of how to use it.
So legislation is the bills that that the senators and Congress members are introducing in local level. It's the legislation is the law. It's the proposals. Legislators are the elected officials, and they legislate. So that's what they do. They legislate. And so that's all of the bills and everything that they're introducing and all of the issues.
But what does legislate mean when you when you break that down?
So legislate could mean that they...
So they're like advocates?
They are advocates. Yeah, your elected officials are representatives. So they're representatives of the greater good. They're representatives of your values. And they legislate. And what do? They bring your values that you elected them to do to legislate. And so legislation is then proposed legislation is the bills that they're introducing. They're called bills. And they're introducing this legislation. Fair pay. Minimum wage standards, $15 minimum wage is legislation. The Obamacare was legislation. Healthcare Act is legislation.
Okay, and number five.
Was that a good answer? Do you understand it now?
To be honest, I don't. And I think I may have to go in and make legislation the drinking word this week. Because that word, I don't know. I don't feel like I got past that word. Like, I need it to be like, it seems like a process. I understood it as a process, the way that you said it. But how do you break down legislation?
Yeah.
The word for what it means without using the word legislation.
I did a quick Google search because you're right. These are hard to break down. And essentially, it comes up with a very simple definition. Laws considered collectively.
Oh, wait, that's super easy.
Yes. So laws considered collectively. So the laws are being considered collectively by the representatives.
Oh, okay. So it's like a mutual consensus.
Exactly. An example of legislation is, say, for example, a new state rule that changes textbook requirements for schools. That's legislation.
Why? Wait, what? Now, man, I thought I knew. Aww. Wait, so, okay. Well, I mean, I feel like I understand what you're saying it is. I just wouldn't know how to use it still. Alrighty. Well, the last one is the House of Representatives, which I did hear you talking about. So I made this before what you said, but just, I guess, in layman's terms, what is the House of Representatives?
So in layman's terms, the House of Representatives is the lower house of the United States Congress. So think of it this. There's Congress, right? Congress is the overall arching legislative body of the United States, Congress. And then it breaks down to two branches. The top branch is the Senate. That's where each state is represented by two senators. And then the next lower branch is the House of Representatives. The House of Representatives is determined, again, by population. So it's population-based versus how the Senate is too specific for all, you know, for all states. And so House of Representatives is the lower house. And you also have that in state government. So, for example, in the state of California and most states, some of them change the names, naming conventions, but we have the state Senate and then we have the assembly. And the assembly is the lower house and same structure. The state Senate is appointed the state is broken down proportionate by population, and then every district is appointed the same one senator, and then the assembly is population based.
And so would the House of Representatives, do they decide on what propositions become available to vote on like ballots?
Well, it's a two-chamber process. Everything, the legislative process is a two-chamber process. And so, if bills and legislations are introduced in one house, for example, in the Senate, say a senator introduces a bill, then the Senate has to approve it, and then it has to go to the House of the House of Representatives, or in the state case, the state assembly, and they also have to pass it. Has to pass as both houses. Mm-hmm. And then it moves on to the president or the governor or, you know, whoever the executive is in that situation. So it's bicameral, two chambers.
Okay, so you passed. You win. You got all 5 points. I got none of them. Okay, so I want people to understand what conservatives means and what liberal means, because I think those terms are thrown around a lot without maybe people like understanding exactly what it means. Like, even in conversations I've had with family members, I'll say, oh, I bet you that person is conservative because of the way that they either reacted to something. Like, we'll watch a lot of The View, so I'll say, oh, something that they said on The View, you can just tell that she leans towards a conservative lifestyle or a liberal lifestyle. So what makes somebody conservative and what makes somebody liberal?
I think it's important to keep in mind in both instances, and especially right now, the hardest thing when dealing with family, and I know, leaning one way and having family members who may lean another way, especially in such polarized times that we're facing right now. The key important thing to remember and what helps me is that people are going to find ways to believe whatever they want to believe. Yeah. And so when we're looking at people and thinking how irrational that may seem and how we can't quite understand how they could have that perspective, it's super important to just remember that people will always believe whatever they want to believe. And so, you know, there's many, many, many factors that go into how people identify and their political views. And so, you know, family, gender, religion, race and ethnicity, your region that you live in, your state, your area, all contribute to the American political attitudes and behaviors that we witness. And so there's really no actual single set of policies regarded as conservative. Yeah. The meaning of the word, the actual meaning of the word itself, depends on what is considered traditional in a given place and time. And so that's why it's so hard, because people are like, maybe what conservative meant in 2016 does not mean conservative right now, you know, as we're seeing. And so there's key defining factors that differentiate between a liberal and a conservative. And really the only way I know how to identify it is a quote that I carry around with me from JFK. And he was asked once, when he was considered a liberal, right, and he was considered this far advanced and looking forward, this president. And so when he was asked what liberal meant, he said, if by liberal they mean someone who looks ahead and not behind, someone who welcomes new ideas without rigid reactions, someone who cares about welfare of the people, their health, their housing, their schools, their jobs, their civil rights, their civil liberties, someone who believes we can break through the stalemate and suspicions that grip us in our policies abroad. If that's what they mean by a liberal, then I am proud that I'm a liberal. And I would hearken to JFK's comments there, that I myself as well am proud to be a liberal. And when I look at something like conservatives, for example, you know, it's outrageous. It's about 90% of conservatives are white. And one of the biggest threats right now in the conservative movement is the federal judges that are being appointed at a record-setting pace by Trump, which as well are two-thirds white. But it's important to remember that there's liberals and conservatives in both parties. So while we assume that conservatives are Republicans, there's conservative Democrats, you know, and there's liberal Republicans. And they're not the same. You know, they're very different. And so conservative, I think for me, the two words that come to mind are tradition and religion. And this kind of backward thinking, you know, against gay marriage, against women's rights and abortion, against the civil society, against social welfare programs. They say, you know, it's coincidental that they always say that conservatives are against government and against big government, and yet they want government overarching into women's bodies, for example. And so it's the juxtaposition of when it fits for them, you know, and again, it's lived experience.
One of the big things I know that, you know, in my small arsenal of what I know about conservative and liberal, I've had a conversation with Mac before about taxes. I remember we were talking about, like, how come people are so passionate one way or the other. And I remember telling him that usually conservative people are very touchy with the way that they vote about taxes. So again, I don't fully understand it, so I don't want to overspeak on something and try to explain something I really don't understand. But from what I do understand, why is it that conservative people tend to be about finances and taxes, and liberal people usually are for taxing more on people who make more money? I don't know. How do you really center that topic into how conservatives vote with taxes, things related to taxes?
I think that that's a good example that folks can understand specifically. I think the major difference, and it's one of the wins right now for conservatives, is this tax reform. that the president can tout as his biggest success. And what we, the layman people, know is that my taxes didn't go down, and it was corporate America and the top 1% who is benefiting from those tax cuts. And so the main difference to look at it is that social welfare state. And so liberals and who lean more Democrats would say that, you know, and for even me myself, the way I believe, I'm willing to pay more taxes if I get more. So I'm willing to pay more taxes to ensure that my roads are paved, to ensure that the air that I'm breathing is clean, to ensure that the food that I'm putting in my mouth is safe for me to be eating. I'm willing to pay more to have my health insurance covered and to ensure that my neighbors have health insurance and to ensure that all have health insurance. Whereas a conservative, a fiscal conservative, is going to view it as we need to secure what we have, right? We want to remain in power. And when it comes to taxes, the way that they view it is if you give a tax break to the top 1%, to the corporations, to the richest men in the world, essentially, which is exactly who it is, white men who are the richest men in the world. And if you give them tax breaks, it's what they call the Reagan trickle-down economics. And that if they have access to more money, they're going to reward their employees with better working conditions, with better health insurance policies, with higher pay, when we know in a capitalistic society that's not the case. Look at Walmart, for example, right? They make upwards of hundreds of millions of dollars a day, and yet more than a third of their workers are on assistance, government programs assistance. And so that's it doesn't translate. And so the only way that I can take it into my perspective and try and understand it is fiscal conservatives want to remain in power. So how do we remain on top? How do we keep those that are on top in power? And how do we remain and keep those that are on the bottom below us? And so that's the argument that I see, is how do we remain in power? Well, keep wealth in the hands of the top 1%. Don't let wealth transfer to the bottom 99%. And that's really how the way that I see it personally. Mm-hmm.
Do you think that somebody who is a conservative or a Republican would see it that way? Or do you think that they would have a different way? I don't get that where it gets lost in translation, because the way that you explained it seems so clear. Like, it's like, okay, now I understand that. So how come they would be thinking so differently? How come they would have something completely different to explain their position? I don't get where there's such a miscommunication.
Exactly. And that's when it comes back to the definition of what is liberal, what is conservative, that it's based off of lived experiences, right? What defines whether you're a conservative or not. And so you have, for example, a lived experience of coming from a family of wealth and going through a life of wealth and having these lived experiences that show you the quote unquote American dream. So I work hard, I get what I want, I'm successful in the end. When in reality, we know that it's the top 1% that's experiencing that. And so their argument is that capitalism and the system that we have in place rewards those who work hard. And so if you work hard, you'll make money, you'll be successful, you'll gain wealth. But we know that the systems and institutions in place don't allow for that. We have systemic racism, and we have systems that have been, you know, built since the foundation of our country that don't allow for those on the bottom to be successful and to move forward in life. You know, if you look at conservatives and liberals as a whole complex, we're looking at 90% white conservatives, and then look at liberals are predominantly people of color, women, younger, educated. And so there's a big difference. You know, it's that lived experience that makes a difference, in my personal opinion anyway. And so, you know, you can't take that lived experience away from them. It may not be right, but you can't take it away from them. And that's where the differing, you know, views happen, where it's hard to understand, because they have their experience and others have their own experience. And you can't necessarily take the experience away from one to account for the other. It's definitely a lived experience. All the issues on hand are single-payer healthcare. What is that designed to do? Ensure that everyone has access to healthcare. Tuition-free public college is a liberal thing. What's so liberal about that? Everyone gets educated. You know, what about higher top marginal income tax rates? That's another big issue between conservative and liberals. What's so crazy about an idea that I pay the same taxes as someone who makes $100 million? It's actually not that crazy of an idea, but what does it do? It keeps the person who makes $100 million on top. And it keeps me below him.
So, okay, something that I want the audience to really kind of grasp is how come so many people that I'm seeing don't exactly support Joe Biden? Is it because they want somebody outside of the system, like you just said? I see so many young people, especially, that are like, I will not vote for him. And for me, again, somebody, I'm not ever claiming that I'm this well-informed person, but I am interested and I'm willing to learn more. I see Joe Biden as somebody who has the experience. You know, he's somebody who's qualified. He literally was just working as our vice president for 8 years with, in my opinion, was the best president ever. Again, and I'm saying that I don't sound like this, you know, politician, and I'm not, so I don't need to sound that way. But in my opinion, Obama was the best president. So why would you be against somebody who is supported by Barack Obama, by somebody who is endorsed by him, by somebody who is just being endorsed by all these admirable people and influential people? So I don't get why so many young people are not.
Well, I think that's part of his problem, is standing on his own 2 feet aside from Obama, right? And I think a lot of folks are viewing him as an extension of Obama, which, of course, in terms of a policy platform, he is. But really, you know, the way that I look at it is like anything else. The president is the top job. It's an institution that's the most powerful institution in our country. And it's something that I've looked up to my whole life and has proven to be, you know, one of the strongest democratic societies in the world. And when you look at someone like Joe Biden, his resume is virtually unmatched, you know, and not only that, but going through the Obama years, it introduced him to a new generation. And so while I feel that some are able to argue that he's a part of the institution and he was there, right, and we saw some of that shining through in some of his previous legislation and how folks may call him a flip-flopper, you know, another term where his policy platforms have changed over years, as is the case with all of us. I mean, as humans and individuals, we change our mind. Right.
You know, I've been saying this. Oh, my God.
Exactly.
People are allowed to change their mind, and it's powerful. And if somebody thought something, you know, like I think we talked about this off record, but we were talking about Hillary Clinton, who kind of was against, not kind of, she was against gay marriage. And then people say all of a sudden she is for it. And it's like, well, people evolve with the times, and we can't hold that against them, that now they are for something that you are also for. So why are we going to sit here and harp on that instead of accepting it and moving forward with it?
And that's really the key. I think that's what JFK was trying to highlight in that quote that I referenced earlier. It's is it a liberal that's looking ahead? Exactly. And a conservative that's a traditionalist and stuck at looking behind. We have to start looking ahead. And so understand that people can change. And even with gay marriage itself, you know, my dad, for example, prior to having a gay son, would not have ever supported gay rights or gay marriage in his entire life. With a gay son, it changes. He now is fully supportive and is one of my, you know, strongest support systems. And so people can absolutely change. And that's the key. And so with young people, particularly, I think the reason why they aren't supporting Biden is because they were supporting Sanders, right? And so it's crazy because this like cult has developed around Sanders. And while as a Democrat, liberal leaning, I agree with a lot of his policy platforms and I understand the plight of the youth and the energy around his campaign. But what people don't realize is that we have a specific system in place and you need to be able to have a candidate that can navigate the process. When you mentioned before, what is legislation? Well, there's a process and you need to be able to navigate it. And in like any job, you need the experience. And there's a lot of, you know, quote unquote, politicking, as I call it. You have to be able to politic. It's not only politics, but it's politicking, you know, and it's a game. It's essentially a game. And so, you know, while I may not agree with the system and I understand that there's, you know, inequities in the system itself, I do understand that candidates would have to essentially follow the system in order to be successful. And so, you know, someone like Joe Biden is going to give us what we need in this time. I mean, you know, everywhere where he stands is exactly, you know, where Bernie Sanders stands and where the difference lies, say, with healthcare for all. you know, people argue that Bernie Sanders is healthcare for all and Joe Biden isn't. Well, Joe Biden is for expanding Obamacare. And so while healthcare for all and single payer healthcare sounds like an excellent idea and something that I could get behind as well, there's a process we have to follow to get there. And expanding Obamacare is a step in the right direction. And so we have to look at what can we do right now, looking at the big picture to achieve in the end what we're looking for. And I think that Joe Biden is able to do that on the issues. You know, he wants to end cash bail reform. The criminal justice system is broken. We're seeing that right now. We need to, you know, scrap the disparity on sentencing for drugs, cocaine, and mandatory minimum sentences reform, for example. He wants to eliminate them, eliminate private prisons. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And quite frankly, it gets confusing to me. And I think that that's where the ageism thing plays in. And they say, well, not another, you know, 80-year-old white man. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I understand, you know, I understand that we want to be reinvigorated. We want someone like, you know, younger. I mean, wouldn't it be great, you know, Pete Buttigieg, age range, gay. I mean, we want someone younger. I understand that. But, you know, Biden is someone who can get us there. And when you try and think of 2016, someone who voted for Trump, who we now need to make them vote, essentially yes. change their mind, excuse me, not yes. make them, but we need to change their mind. Well, Biden is a candidate that can change yeah. their mind because he's That's more exactly of a centrist. Mm-hmm. He's more of a centrist. And there would be more people who voted for Trump. Now, you put someone else who, you know, in the primaries, I supported Elizabeth Warren. I love her. I supported her in the primary because she's who I stood with most in my values, knowing that she wouldn't get the nominee for president. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to support her in the primaries and understand that, you know, Joe Biden can move us forward. And that's the exact type of candidate that's going to be able to do it.
Is it fair to think of voting as a strategy? Because what you just touched on was, okay, I need to think of my end goal for me here is to make sure that Trump is not in office anymore. So I think, okay, when I'm voting, I need to think of handing an option over to people who may have voted for Trump and then have kind of seen what a mess that has turned into and right. that have been like, okay, wow, I voted for this man. He's not turning out to be the president that I wanted. So now what other option do I have? So I want to be right. able to not only agree with the option that I'm voting for, but to hand over an option to somebody that is thinking that way. And so I'm thinking of things as a strategy. And if people want to say that, oh, well, that's part of the system or whatever too, whatever. It's a strategy. And I think that it would work. And I think that Joe Biden has always been that name that has been flying around ever since Trump got into the office that could take him off that pedestal there.
Well, and not only that, but we need to have an option of somebody who's not going to have another scandal or something come up, you know, from their past or skeletons in their closet. Joe Biden has been through the vetting process as vice president, as a senator. He has been through that process. He has been in public life over 30 years. You know, and so I think that when someone dedicates their life, they're in it for the right reasons. And it's the same reason I felt in 2016 for Hillary Clinton. You don't dedicate your entire life to a life of living a public life. And trust me, I've worked for elected officials. It's not glitz and glam, which everyone thinks, but it's absolutely voting is a strategy. And one of the things that we weren't able to touch on here, but I'll just highlight briefly, is how important of a strategy it is in local elections. Voting is absolutely a strategy. We need to ensure that we're putting people in power. You know, you look at everything that's going on right now, and in the background, I can almost hear the protest passing my house here smack dab in the middle of downtown Oakland. Well, how do we get change? At the local level, you know, who develops the policies that police use? The mayor and city council, the police chief, the local police chief. Voting is absolutely a strategy, and we need to be using that to ensure that our values are represented. So absolutely.
Well, that is, I think, a perfect way to kind of close this all out. Again, there's just so many things that you are able to really enlighten and inform. And I think we got exactly what I hoped out of this.
Great.
And then again, just to reinforce how important voting is, I want to encourage people, and hopefully you can help me out, to encourage people who maybe want to forfeit their vote because they are so against Joe Biden. There's so many people that have died and who have suffered for our right to vote, and to then sit at home and to blatantly dismiss your vote, I think is just such a slap in the face.
It's not a privilege. You know, voting is not a privilege. It's a right. So your vote directly affects the daily quality of life that you experience every single day. So yes, you have to vote. You absolutely have to vote.
And with that said, I want to thank you again so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us and inform and answer all my silly questions. And I think you really explained things. I'll definitely be able to move forward and feel like
excellent.
I know just a little bit more when I'm voting. And if I, you know, I've been registered for years, but if I wasn't, then at least I would have the very first step or the next step in how to register to vote. So.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for
yes.
those resources, for the information, like I said, and I appreciate you taking time to talk to us.
All right. Thank you so much, Des. It was great to see you. Great to talk with you. I had an excellent time and really great sharing the message, and just hope that folks get out there. Everyone stay safe. Know that we'll get through these trying times and prevail as we always do. So thank you so much for having me on, Des. Good to see you. And thanks again.
Yes. Good to see you, too. And we will see you all next week. We'll be right back.